It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm Julie Murray, and this is Media Pressure, the untold story of Mara Murray. The following podcast contains adult language and potentially triggering topics. Listener discretion is advised. The opinions presented by my guest are their own. Episode 8. Engage with empathy. We live in a world where people want to problem solve. We're uncomfortable with ambiguity. But what if there are no answers? No resolution? Imagine waking up every day with the looming sense of unknowing, and that unknowing becomes the only thing you do know. Where the presence of the absence pervades all your waking moments. That's what it feels like to have a loved one vanish without a trace. It's a unique category of loss coined ambiguous loss by Dr. Pauline Boss, where ambivalence reigns and emotional closure is impossible. My family lives in a paradoxical state of grayness, where nothing is black and white, and the passage of time only darkens the shade. For families of the missing, time does not heal all. Quite the opposite. The deep personal impact of Mara's disappearance is nuanced for my family. It changed us, our outlook, our life trajectories in a moment. We all handled it differently in our own idiosyncratic ways. My dad's pain surfaced as frustration and drive. My siblings turned inward. I self-soothed with obsessive workouts. Here's my brother Curtis describing how it altered him.
So you have a mother struggling, just diagnosed with cancer, you're 15 years old, you're just a kid, your sister's missing, we can't find her, and you're essentially one of the main caregivers for mom. And so you were trying to balance all of those things. How did you do that?
I didn't really think about the weight of it all. It was just more of go into these are the things that I need to do. And then I had to be there for my family because, as you know, we've always been taught family's everything. We've always been strong that way. We've always supported each other in every way we can. So I just knew that I needed to be the one to step up for her in those scenarios. And I never really felt like it was any kind of a burden or anything. It was just what needed to be done at the time. And it was just all that mattered.
It also had a negative impact on your high school career. Can you talk about how being away affected you in terms of your progression in high school?
Yeah, and a lot of that set me back because there were policies in place that revoked credits for certain days' worth of absences. So initially, I would have lost credits just for absences, but if I was able to catch up, I may have been able to retain those, but I was going through so much at the time with emotions, and I was out not just on the initial search, but multiple times. So it became almost insurmountable because being there for the searches and for family was more important to me than schoolwork or anything else at the time. So eventually I knew that I was not going to be able to graduate on time like I would have wanted to. And it eventually led to me going to a night school because it was very important to me to get a diploma, not a GED. And I left the school I had to withdraw from Whitman-Hanson, which was very painful. I had a lot of friends there. And I ended up graduating a little ahead of my class through the night school because I've always been a fairly intelligent person, so I've always had tested well and I had good MCAS scores and SATs and things like that. And I remember when I went to the night school and I walked into the reception to sign up, I remember this very distinctly. The woman looked at me, she's like, "So, Mr. Wizard, what the hell are you doing here?" Because I wasn't your typical night school applicant, I guess. But one of the most painful things about that was I had to watch all of my friends walk across the stage to graduate, and I wasn't part of it. I remember I left work, I was working at Shaw's at the time, and I told my boss that I was leaving. Because all my friends were graduating, I told him, "I'm leaving. If that's a problem, you can fire me." And I went to the graduation ceremony to watch them all graduate. And that was a very strange experience because I belonged on that stage. So one of the things that has surprised me about going through all of this is the way that time kind of warps the way you feel about a situation. During the initial searches, all I wanted to do was find Mara. I wanted to see her again. As the years have gone on and I've confronted this, now I am 100% convinced that Mara is gone. But the thought of seeing her now, out there somewhere, to see her, is actually, it petrifies me. Because the only thing that I want is the best for my sister. I want her happiness. And if I saw her, what am I supposed to do with that? How am I supposed to react? And it really, I shouldn't be afraid to see my sister, but at this point, I am. And time does weird things. And that's been one of the biggest impacts, is living with that. I've also had a lot of guilt over the years, because in the beginning, I didn't take things as seriously as I otherwise could or should have, because I was young. I didn't really know how to deal with it, but I've always felt guilty, like I should have done more. Should have been more involved in the beginning. And the guilt of not being as involved in the beginning is something I've confronted for, you know, most of the time for the past, you know, 18, 19 years. That's one of the things that I've struggled with the most. There were many ripple effects, and I do remember I gave up playing baseball because of this. I remember it was a specific game. It was a town league game. And at that point, I was actually a very good player. And I remember it was the first game of the season after this had happened. And I actually had a wonderful game, but I remember being out on the field. I played third base. And I had tears in my eyes. Because all baseball did was remind me of Mara, the time we spent practicing. And it was very, very painful. And that particular game, I had a great game. I know I went 4-for-4, drove in many runs. It was, you know, I was a good player, but at the end of the game, I remember walking to the coach and telling him I wouldn't be back. And I've yet to this day pick up a baseball glove again.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mom was with me that day. And I told her, I was like, I'm not playing again. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that was the reason. It was just too painful. That's when it all started to hit me, is how much life had changed. And it was very, very difficult.
You're making me cry. I knew you would.
Yeah, that's what I'm good for. But it's the truth. Most people don't know about that. That was when, giving up baseball, because I loved it.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the same.
Yeah. People don't understand those small little things that happen when you're thrust into a situation like this, where you have a piece of you torn away. And it takes so much else with it that you don't even expect. Like, why could you not play baseball again? It just affects you in so many ways and in ways that you're just not prepared for.
Yeah. It just leaves a hole. There's always something missing. Not having the closure, there's just always something missing. And, you know, our lives are irrevocably altered by this. I mean, we spend so much time devoting ourselves to just finding more, and our lives are so different because of it. It has brought us closer in ways, but it did change our whole family dynamic. We've become stronger, and I am very proud of the way we conduct ourselves through all of this. I thank God that our family is as close and as well-knit as we are, because without those connections and without that strong family bond, we never would have survived this. We will not give up. We can't give up, and it has given us a strength and a resilience that I think we may not have had otherwise.
One thing I think about when people say, how do you keep going? That question confuses me, because I know that if you or I were missing, Mara would be sitting here doing exactly what we're doing. She would probably be doing it much better.
She did everything better.
I know. So when people ask you that, how do you keep going? Do you get that same sense of just bewilderment that I get?
Yeah, it's the better question for me is, how could I not? Not keeping going and not searching and bringing this thing to a conclusion is not an option. It's just, Mara's too important. It's at the core of who we are to do right by our family. Can't just let it go. Mara wouldn't let it go. And I'm, like I said, I'm so thankful that we have that strong sense of family and that determination, because Mara deserves nothing less.
And she would give nothing less.
Exactly, yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Having a missing sister means I don't have a lot of time, but I know investing in my future is important, so I turn to Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Acorns takes the guesswork off my plate so I can focus on the investigation, knowing I have a better chance of financial stability in the long run. Head to acorns.com/mediapressure or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/mediapressure. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Security LLC, member FINRA/SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com. It's heating up in Virginia with summer approaching quickly, so I crack my windows for a little fresh air, and sometimes I forget to close them. But SimpliSafe has my back with award-winning whole home protection. Sensors instantly detect break-ins, so I can go on about my day without a panic attack. It's got me surrounded in the best possible way. Another thing I love about SimpliSafe is the versatile indoor cameras that have smart motion sensors that can distinguish between my fur baby and a human. So no false alarms here. I don't know about you, but I live in a very walkable area, and the warmer temps means a huge increase in foot traffic outside my home. But I always know we're safe from intruders with SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/mediapressure. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. As most of my listeners know, I live an active lifestyle, but I do suffer from the dreaded seasonal allergies, which really slow me down when I'm hitting the trails. I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for 2 years now, and it's been an absolute game changer. I can go on my runs and hikes without my eyes watering like a fountain, or having to stop all the time to wipe my nose. And I can speak without feeling like I swallowed a frog. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. I've walked you through the significant events and search efforts in my sister's disappearance. If you find yourself left with questions, you're not alone. We still have many. See, until we find Mara, it's hard to say what happened. However, I will say the overwhelming consensus within my family is she was met with foul play at the hands of someone who did her harm. The fact nothing has ever been found, combined with the lack of credible sightings, bolsters this belief for us. Sadly, it's the worst possible outcome for Mara and those who loved her. It's unbearable to think about, but we have to live in reality. Now, I've mentioned numerous breaks in protocols and instances of incompetence by police, which I believe is why 19 years later, we are still left without answers. I mean, after all, police didn't even interview me, her sister, until a few years ago. I want to be clear, though. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I'm basing my belief on what we do know. After hearing the facts, you may come to a different conclusion, and that's fine, encouraged really, because to date, no one has solved the case. I keep an open mind. Dissenting opinions, fresh eyes, alternate way of looking at things may be the key to finding Mara. A big problem in my sister's case is that people become married to a certain theory, and when challenged on its merits, they become hostile and defensive. Not the way to approach a two-decade-old unsolved cold case, in my opinion. Recently, I've made significant efforts to collaborate more with law enforcement, sharing information and giving my perspective. I was able to get their blessing for lab testing through Othram Labs, paid for by my family. Unfortunately, the samples were too degraded to extract any DNA, but it's a step in the right direction. I also teamed up with other families in New England and helped establish the New Hampshire's Missing and Murdered Unsolved Coalition. We marched to New Hampshire's Attorney General's office in August of 2023, demanding an audience and action. And for the most part, they've been receptive. In fact, this past November 2023, I met with the New Hampshire Chief of the Cold Case Unit and the Assistant Attorney General in Concord. This time, I brought my own family advocate from Light the Way. In the past, I attended these types of meetings alone, so it was very helpful to have some support. Law enforcement provided a case update and reaffirmed it's an active, suspicious missing persons case. They even shared their upcoming plan to meet with the FBI. In turn, I shared several pieces of information I discovered, one of which involved a name detectives asked me about on two different occasions. I didn't recognize it. So with some help, I did hours and hours of research and figured out that the name they asked me about was actually an alias, unbeknownst to them and me, of course. There was an anxiousness in the room as I went page by page on what I found. I could sense they were as shocked as I was. Some pretty troubling stuff. My point is that a more collaborative relationship could be the key to solving this. Leaving that meeting, I got the sense they felt the same. It could also be just wishful thinking on my part, but time will tell. We'll meet again in the spring. Switching gears a bit here. Now, I want to share the gut feelings from my family and guest on what they believe happened. Here's my brother, Curtis.
I think Mara was taken. I think she most likely got in the car with the wrong person, and nothing good came from that. You know how close we are. Mara would not just leave and leave us struggling open-ended like this. She wouldn't let us suffer like this. I think that Mara met the wrong person, that person abducted her, and she is most likely dead now.
Freddie also suspects foul play.
I sometimes go back and forth about my ideas of what most likely happened, I know it was foul play. That is not even a question in my mind. I tend to think she got picked up by someone. Mara was very trusting, naive in a way in certain situations. She wouldn't necessarily assume that someone was a bad person and could do her harm. She would accept help, probably, and it would make her vulnerable in the situation that she was in. Because of those aspects of her personality and the vulnerability that she has or could have in that situation, I think she was probably picked up by someone, probably was looking for help out of the situation she was in. She got in with the wrong person, and there was foul play that happened because of this. That's my feeling, and that's what I believe is probably what happened.
Attorney Terry O'Connell shares his gut feeling.
My gut feeling is something very bad happened to her, right at the scene or near the scene of her minor motor vehicle accident. From there, at some point, she was abducted. Awful things probably happened to her, but she is definitely a victim of an abduction and homicide, and then the disposal of her body. It's very difficult to dispose of bodies in the middle of winter in a state like New Hampshire when you have 2+ feet of snow. So that's why you're looking at different houses, basements. It's hard to dig a hole in the wintertime out in the snow in that shorter time period. And it's also why we looked at French Pond. French Pond had fishing shanties on the pond, and you could drive out there. And maybe that's why he said he finally went to French Pond, in case somebody saw him turn down French Pond Road. So, unfortunately, that's our conclusion. It's certainly my conclusion. She loved her family. She'd be with you today if someone didn't do this to her.
John Smith weighs in.
I have two basic thoughts on that. And I think that because there is so much that surrounds the night of the case with the police and the witnesses, that somebody, the police or witnesses or somebody that lives in that area knows exactly what happened, and they are responsible for Maura's demise. And I believe that, like I said, could the police be involved? There's so much that points to that as well. And maybe they're just the Keystone cops and they really screwed up that night and they've been backtracking ever since. But you wouldn't need to backtrack that much for all these years. I just don't see that happening. So that's my basic thought. And then we have the other person who inserted himself into the case. And I think he was my first basic number one, just because of things that I learned about him. And it seemed more likely than the other scenario that I just told you about, because being a former police officer, I don't like to think that thing about law enforcement. I have complete respect for law enforcement. Everybody thinks I have a vendetta against the police. I do not. The police are there to do what they do. They're there to do a job. As long as they do it professionally, honestly, and are there to protect and serve, I'll stand up for you every second. But there's bad cops out there. And not just in Haverhill, New Hampshire, they're everywhere. So, you know, we're not just picking on Haverhill by any means.
Based on what you've heard so far, it's pretty obvious how my dad feels. And he's been very vocal about his gut feeling about what he thinks happened to Mara.
Well, the bottom line is, I strongly, myself and many, many others, strongly suspect foul play. Feel I know what happened. Actually, what bothers me the most, because that's so unnecessary, is that there's a property where many individual cadaver dogs with individual handlers for each one from all over the place have been to this location and established positive dog hits done by a variety of people. And with a strong indication like that, you'd think that just once, the police would have shown up and investigated it themselves instead of just telling me that, nah, there's nothing there. You know, what are cadaver dogs talking about then, with all different handlers. It needs to be looked at. Just look how they handled the Trish Haynes case. What's going on up there? So, I mean, even with the Connecticut River Valley killer, that hasn't been completely followed up. I think it's another example of the fact that there can't be any crime in vacation land. You can't make people afraid to come. The economy depends on it. It is the economy up there. And you can't take chances with it by scaring people away, keeping them from coming. I think that is a strong part of it. So there's a strong recalcitrance on the part of the police to step in and actively and do a meaningful investigation.
You better crank that AC because things are heating up at DraftKings Casino. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. Play hundreds of games all summer long. Dive in with a casino classic or blast off with DraftKings exclusive Rocket. New players start by playing just $5 to get $50 in casino credits in your pocket instantly. All you gotta do is download the DraftKings Casino app and sign up with code MEDIAPRESSURE. You'll be soaking up the fun in no time. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. One per opted-in new customer. $5 in wagers required. Max $50 in non-withdrawable casino credits that expire in 168 hours. See casino.draftkings.com/get50 for eligibility, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
It's warming up out there, and my new vintage wash utility shorts from Quince are my go-to staple. Where have you been all my life? Of course, mine are army green, go figure, but they do have several different colors. I just love the quality, the way they fit, and how comfortable they are. But what I love most is the price tag, which is 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince cuts out the middleman, passing those savings to us. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/mediapressure for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/mediapressure to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/mediapressure.
Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s and play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. The thrill is endless, with new chapters added weekly, allowing you to not only enjoy the detective adventure, but also to personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
My sister disappeared twice, once from the side of the road in New Hampshire, then again online and in print. The real Mara, the one I grew up with and loved, disappeared in a sea of misinformation and sensationalism after her physical body vanished. Mara's case is often referred to as two mysteries. Where was she going and what happened to her? In the aftermath of her disappearance, my family is left with two tragedies. Mara's disappearance and the constant re-traumatization, leaving my family shattered. For us, the damage is done. But I don't want to see other families go through what we have. And if speaking out about it, as painful as it is, gives people pause when consuming and creating content, then I've made progress towards that goal. I owe that to Mara. Media pressure, the namesake of this podcast, is sometimes the only tool families like mine have in order to keep our loved ones' stories alive. It's a double-edged sword, though. On the one hand, it's unmatched for spreading awareness and keeping pressure on public officials. On the other hand, vulnerable victims and families become sitting ducks for vicious attacks and widespread misinformation. The very families advocating become the targets and subsequent subject matter for sensationalized fodder online and in print. Families don't ask for these tragedies. Trust me, I would much rather be living my life privately and not airing my trauma journey online. But I have no choice. No way out. And that's what motivated me to tell this story in the first place. In my own words, knowing full well the consequences of speaking my truth. Sharing our lived experiences will undoubtedly result in additional attacks, criticism, and litigious threats. But for me, it's about doing right by Mara, and worth it. So many others have co-opted my family's tragedies for their own purposes, the majority of whom only want to help. Others have very different goals, and it's not hard to distinguish between the two. All you have to do is pay attention to the retaliation I receive from just telling my own sister's story. One of the most painful examples of how the unethical coverage impacted my family is what it did to my late sister Kathleen. Her private struggles with addiction were flippantly used as true crime content, without context, without consent, and without compassion. She was embarrassed, ashamed, and further withdrew from society until her death in 2021. Publicly discussing specifics about her struggles years after Mara's disappearance had no journalistic purpose and did nothing to further Mara's case. It did, however, cause irreparable harm to someone already coping with the unbearable, unresolved loss of a sibling. My family has repeatedly been called suspicious, liars, accused of horrific things, accosted at home and at conventions, mocked at vigils honoring Mara. Mocked at vigils because we didn't respond the way a stranger deemed appropriate. My dad's personal cell phone number posted online, strangers knocking on our doors. We were publicly called, quote, the worst humanity had to offer, end quote. We had to defend against negatives, insinuations of sexual abuse, impropriety, and even criminal behavior. All unreservedly false. Sound reporting replaced with constant artificial high drama. And to rationalize the exploitation, Mara is dehumanized and used as the proverbial doormat for salacious clickbait. My family cast as villains in our own tragedy. These attacks hurt, and with each new attack, the healing process begins anew. You have to ask yourself why. I think the answer is pretty obvious. Mara herself has become public property, a content-generating machine, her humanity stripped away in the process, armchair diagnosed as a sociopath without a shred of support. It's to the point where I don't even recognize the character that was created. That's not my sister. Did she have flaws? Of course, but she wasn't a sociopath or monster. Neither is my family. We wear the emotional scars caused by these unethical tactics that have inflicted everlasting harm on us. The real humans at the center of this tragedy, the ones with the most at stake. Scars stealth deleting can never heal. We were approached by a complete stranger declaring they were writing a book. We declined to participate, not because we didn't want a book, but because we didn't trust him based on our research. Instantly, my family was cast as the villains. It's actually comical because it's so glaringly obvious. Retribution for our non-participation. Labeled suspicious because we didn't want to share our tragedy with a stranger. Our instincts were right. as the result, quote, embodies every problem that arises when online obsessives are infected with delusions of detective grandeur, end quote, according to a review in The New Yorker by Michelle Dean. See, journalists are supposed to adhere to a code of ethics, minimize harm, be accountable, remain objective. Objectivity becomes a casualty when those purporting to be professional ignore this code, literally write themselves into the story of a missing woman they never met. Nevertheless, we awake daily to the unbearable sadness over Mara's loss, then quickly brace for the next unfair attack. I want to share how Mara's disappearance and subsequent coverage has impacted my family. Here's Curtis.
For the past almost two decades now, our family has come under fire, but most importantly, Mara herself. So can you describe the impact of that sort of media onslaught and that unethical coverage and exploitation of us who are private citizens thrust into this true crime space? How has that exploitative coverage impacted you?
It's given me... The whole scenario has given me a resiliency I didn't know that I had. Because when you read things that you know are blatantly false, that are taken as fact, about the people that you love, it is very difficult not to lash out and respond. It's very, very difficult. And that has happened repeatedly over the years. It's hard to stifle it, the urge to just defend. But it almost gets to a point where it's not worth it. Because if you spend all your energy trying to defend yourself, you lose sight of what's most important, which is to bring Mara home.
As a family, we came together and decided that our azimuth is strictly pointed towards finding Mara, and that is our number one mission. And despite all of the distractions and the easy road, which would be to lash back out at some of these horrific accusations, insinuations levied upon our family, we decided that we weren't going to waste our energy on that, and we've always taken the high road. What do you think Mara would think of our reaction to the horrific accusations and insinuations? What do you think she would want us to do?
Well, I know Mara wouldn't want us to waste our lives being upset. She wouldn't want us to harbor anger and to let it eat away at us. Like, for me personally, my reputation is of no concern to me. The most important thing is to find Mara. Because she's, you know, my sister, that's the only thing I care about. I know that Mara would not want us to be in a constant state of battling and always have conflict. Because she was a fun-loving, very happy person, and she would always want the best for us. We always want the best for our family. She would want the best for us, and to waste our time and energy on conflicts over that, I don't think it's something she would want us to do.
I agree. And it's not easy.
No. It's, like I said, your instinct is to defend and jump and get in confrontations, but it doesn't do any good, and it doesn't serve the purpose of finding out what happened tomorrow and bringing her home first. That has to be the priority, is to find Mara first. Anything else is secondary to that.
And we have, as a family, certainly been challenged more so than other families in similar situations. And I'm proud of the way that we've handled ourselves and maintained our focus. I mean, you and I talk about all the different things that we want to say and rebuttals that we want to make. But at the end of the day, we decide that this is not the best use of our time for Mara.
Yeah, and one of the difficult things is sometimes our lack of response or our silence is twisted into a controversy, when really what it is just maintaining our focus. It's almost seems to be perceived like we have something to hide, but we don't have anything to hide. We're just trying to find Mara. And to distract ourselves from that goal isn't productive. It doesn't do any good. And to engage with people who want to take advantage of this situation monetarily or for attention, it just isn't worth the time. And I want to put my time into what's important, and that is Mara.
Freddie is a private person, choosing not to venture into the online mud pit. Even so, he still feels the pain of the destructive coverage.
The people online are, to me, infuriating because to a lot of these people, it's entertainment. It is a hobby, I guess, or a pastime. And I understand that a lot of these people might be motivated to try and help, but some of them are not. Just in it to, I don't know how to describe it, but to cause misery. It's not the kind of thing that people should use for their entertainment. If you want to help, that's great, and we appreciate it and will always accept someone's help. Just causing controversy and harassing people and some of the things that were done online, some of the things that were said about my family, everyone in my family, are just horrific. I think unforgivable.
Has that negative coverage influenced your decision to not be as public?
I think it might have something to do with it, yeah. Other people in the family are better at the public aspect of it than probably I am. And so I never like tried to get attention or like seek out media, or I will do whatever I can do to find Mara. I feel like if being in the spotlight more, if that would help, I would do it.
Now, my family aren't the only ones to suffer from the intrusive, unethical coverage. I get it. People need to be looked into. But at what cost? What's the intention? If it gets us closer to finding Mara, great, I'm all for it. But there's a difference between publishing unflattering information that's newsworthy versus unflattering information with no journalistic purpose. The latter results in public indictments of innocent people in the court of public opinion. Look at the fallout from the Idaho murders, for example. It ruins people's lives. Friends, supporters, advocates, and some with no relevant connection at all have come under attack. One who simply appeared in a photo with Mara. Mara's friend Kate Markopoulos, whose father became the subject at one point, a man two steps removed with no relation to the case whatsoever. He wasn't immune, he was content. Kate herself, she's often criticized for not going up to New Hampshire to search. She explains.
I mean, I think if Fred was like, hey, can you come up? I definitely would have made it happen. But I had so many other things going on, like how am I going to help this? I was a child. What good am I going to do? There is probably it. Like, it never occurred to me to go. Nobody invited me. I wouldn't just go insert myself to something that I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I was still in school. Like, I had to go to class. I can't just ruin my last semester by saying, well, screw this. I'm just going to go live in New Hampshire. I don't know. I'm borderline offended by that, but.
Kate continues talking about the impact it's had on her personally.
It sucks. I actually recently started talking about it with my therapist. It's hurt my feelings because everything they say, it's like I didn't care. Which is not true. And it's like I'm trying to move on with my life. Like, this is one part of it. I can't just stop everything because that's not going to do me any good either. I wish people, I understand they have a job to do, but I just wish that they would consider how what they say affects other people. It hurts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Investigative reporter Bob Ward, from episode 1, shares his thoughts on the coverage of Mara's case.
I think because everybody likes to try to figure out a mystery. True crime is probably the most popular venue out in the media right now. The popular topic in modern media, I think, right now is true crime. People are obsessed with it. They like to consider mysteries and they like to just think about it and it takes over their lives. In Maura's case, we have far more questions than answers. And people like to think that they can somehow pick up something that everybody else has overlooked and find what happened. So people who believe that she was a victim of violent crime, they're starting to look at suspects. But the problem with all of that is that they are not police and they're not investigators. And they don't have access to any of these people. They just have ideas in their minds. And they think they know exactly what happened when they really don't. And I think the longer that Maura is out there and the longer that we don't have answers and we don't know what the investigators in New Hampshire know, if they know anything, the more attractive this is to people who think they can figure it out on their own. And unfortunately, some of that digging or a lot of that digging can be very hurtful for an investigation and for the family too. With Maura's case, what makes Maura's case different is Maura is still not here. So people think that the family is hiding the truth, New Hampshire State Police are hiding the truth, or somebody in that neighborhood where it took place is hiding the truth. And a lot of times I've seen these people get very upset and angry, and it's almost like a religion to them. They feel they know something that nobody else does, and they're hell-bent on trying to expose something that's not there. So Maura's case is unique in that way, with this kind of attention. I mean, really, when I stop to think about it, How many miniseries or docuseries and articles have I read about Maura? Each one of them pushing a different theory. And none of them have been accurate. What I try to do, main guiding point for me in my dealings with you and your family and in other cases, is I keep the victims in front of me. These stories are not really about a cop trying to find a bad guy. It's really trying to find out what happened to the victim and how this impacts the family. So I have to use the victim is my guide. You know, Maura Murray is the one this happened to. As a reporter, the story is what happened to this person, and then it springs out from that point. And I try to keep that forefront of everything that I do.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. I preach victim-centered all day long, everywhere I go, when I do these conferences and speeches and when I talk to reporters, is this item that we're talking about, this story that we're talking about, is it going to further the case? Is it going to help us find Maura? If it's not, then why the hell are we doing it?
I would just say the criminal justice system that we have is imperfect, but it also many times steamrolls over victims. Whether in this case or in other cases that get to court, the victims get pushed right over to the side, always. The families get pushed over to the side. Victim-centered, very important for the media, and I think very important for law enforcement and for the public. Just keep in mind, you know, what we're talking about here. Maura Murray is not a fictional character. She's a real person, and your family are not historical characters in a fictionalized novel. You're real people. You should do these stories only when you think that it's going to somehow advance the story. So in this particular case, you know, what you and your family have endured is terrible. Bad enough, you're dealing with the fact that Maura has been missing for almost 20 years. That's number one. And not that she's no longer presently with us. You know where she is. You can talk to her. You don't know what happened, and neither does anyone else. I can't imagine what that must be like. And if you're having people coming up with their own theories or law enforcement, you know, putting up a stone wall, some of that you have to expect because it is an open case, but it's frustrating. And you're on that side of this. This did happen to you. She was your sister and you deserve answers. And you don't need any of this sideshow circus that is happening here. That's why it's important that you tell the story.
I could fill up 10 episodes outlining the additional trauma heaped on top of my family and those trying to help, but that would also do nothing to help further the case. Instead, I want to combat it by providing better information. As I close this season out, I can say it's been one of the most challenging yet rewarding efforts of my life, and one Maura deserves. Before this series, I kept coming back to the same question. Whose story is it to tell anyways? It's Mara's. And in her absence, who better to tell it than me? I can't say I was fully prepared for how much suppressed emotion it brought to the surface. Sitting with my dad and brothers weeping, feeling the shared grief which is still palpable nearly 20 years later, was more impactful than I ever imagined. Revisiting those intricate details of her case was like resetting a misaligned bone fracture. It hurt, but it was necessary for proper healing. It confirmed the depths of the wounds that have scarred over but are still very much there for everyone in my family. Doing so on my own terms, providing context and nuance to each detail, was far less triggering than passively listening to a stranger do it. It finally gave my family and I that sense of agency we desperately wanted. That's where my call to action comes in. In my nearly 2 decades of lived experience in this space, I've noticed a gap between true crime creators and consumers and the real humans at the center of these tragedies. It's that gap that allows these tragedies to be treated as passive entertainment with layers of exploitation and sensationalism. I believe the bridge to that gap is empathy. It's a superpower. And at present, our society, and especially the true crime space, has an empathy crisis on our hands. So, in 2022, I launched the Engage with Empathy campaign to dampen the voyeurism and replace it with an approach that's more sophisticated than the one staked entirely on sensationalism or pure entertainment. I also wanted to shed light on what it feels like to be thrust into the middle of a real-life tragedy. I have a ton of lived experience to share and mistakes to learn from. Empathy has helped me in that journey. It's what connects us as humans. It's often blurred with sympathy, but there is a distinction. Victims and families aren't asking for pity or woe is me. We want understanding and connection. We want and need empathy. The true crime genre exists because of our real-life tragedies, and there's an inherent responsibility to approach them with care. The pillars of the campaign. C, centering the victim, balancing public interest with the potential harm. A, avoiding harmful speculation. Listen, consumers drive the true crime industry, so vote with your clicks. Ask yourself if this content furthers the case or simply entertains. R, research responsibly. Be critical and curious of content, veracity of sourcing, and do not accept subjective interpretation as indisputable facts. This helps eliminate the harmful proliferation of misinformation. Finally, E, engage with empathy. Victims and families did not choose these tragic paths. Engaging them with a level of sensitivity is crucial in order to prevent exploitation and unfair public indictments of innocent people. Everyone in my family, especially Mara, has been hurt, exploited, and re-traumatized by people who did not engage with empathy. I can't change what's happened to my family, and harboring ill will doesn't solve the greater problem. That's why our approach is to treat people with respect, listen, and engage with empathy. I encourage you to do the same. Raising awareness is the best thing for missing and unsolved cases. However, sidelining ethics for dramatic effect does more harm than good. Please visit our website, maramurraymissing.org, to learn more about the Engage with Empathy campaign and how you can help. My hope for this season was for people to walk away with a better sense of who my sister really was, and a better understanding of the people most impacted by her disappearance. I hope I accomplished that. I want to thank all my guests for being brave enough to share their experiences. I was both humbled and inspired by their vulnerability. Huge thank you to Sarah Turney. She is revolutionizing the true crime space, putting victims and families at the center, giving them agency over their own stories. She once told me, "I love you and I wish I never met you." Same, Sarah. Most importantly, Maza. I miss you something terrible, as Mom would say. I hope I made you proud in telling your story. I don't know where you are yet, but trust me, we're not giving up. I love you. Finally, I know I threw a ton of information at you, and I'm sure you have questions. I'll answer as many as I can in a bonus episode. Follow me on Twitter at JulieMurray2_9, TikTok at Mara Murray Missing, Facebook at Mara Murray Missing Official Group, and Instagram at My Sister Mara. Remember, somebody knows something. The pressure's on. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of my sister Mara Murray, please contact the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit at 603-223-3648 or visit maramurraymissing.org. Special thanks to my friend Sarah Turney, whose trust and guidance made this project possible. Media Pressure is a Voices for Justice media original and is executive produced by Sarah Turney. This series includes original music from my brother, Curtis Murray, as well as Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Julie Murray. For more information about Media Pressure, visit mediapressure.com. For more information about my sister Mara's case, visit maramurraymissing.org.